Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss all things Apple in a massive week that's gone on. iOS 11 hit, of course, and that's out in the wild permanently for all and sundry. 10% of people have downloaded it within the first hour, which is pretty good. Joining me to discuss the ongoing Apple fun from 2 weeks ago and whether they've got their new phones or not. Adam Christensen? No phone yet.
Not that one.
No. So you're saving it for the 10. X, are you?
Yeah, I'm holding out for the 10, for sure.
Okay, fair
enough. I think with a lot of other people.
But you're not going down the store to see if you can pick one up?
No, I'm going to go down to, well, I'm going to go down to the store to see if I can pick up a demo model and just check out the new design and stuff like that. But right. No, beyond that, no, I'm not purchasing one of my own because I want the dual cameras, but I don't want the large size. That's the main reason, really.
Yeah.
I've been wanting those dual cameras since they added them to the 7 model, right? Was it 7?
Yeah.
7 plus, yeah.
7 plus, yeah.
Yes, yeah. But I hate the large size. So for me, the 10 is the perfect combo of size and amazing cameras.
Yeah. Well, no. The chat room is saying that we're dropping audio on the feed.
Uh-oh.
Is that true for everyone or just Joseph?
I'm hearing it okay on my end.
No, okay, right. We'll carry on then, just in case. Next thing, Patrice, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, doing okay. Crazy week as always, but yeah.
Did you get an 8 this morning in the post?
No, I didn't get anything this morning. Even the Apple TV that I kind of expected would show up today didn't show up simply because I hadn't even looked at at the date. I don't know. I must have missed that. So I thought, I mean, when I hit order, it told me the 22nd. But today I checked the confirmation and it did say the 25th or something. So yeah, I didn't even get the Apple TV, but definitely no phone.
But you've got one on order.
No, didn't order the iPhone 8. Not even sure I will order the 10.
No, you've definitely got a 4K TV on order.
Yes, should come in next week. So, okay. Looking forward to it.
I hope so. Did we both get iOS 11? The full out in the wild full version. No Golden Master. No Beta. No. Because now we can poke fun at it, can't we, and feel justified? Because it's
I downloaded the Golden Master, but I mean, it should be the same as the release version. I haven't.
Yeah.
I didn't get an update when they released it.
So we've had a lot of people in the Slack room who've been complaining about long periods of time to update on all devices, and also some severe complaints about battery. And I can honestly say, out of all the updates I've probably done to my iPhone in the last sort of 3 years. This was the easiest, easily the easiest. It went through in about 40 minutes tops, and the watch updated in, and mine's a version 1, the watch updated in about 40 minutes, and that was it. Miller's talking 3 hours for his. Other people were talking like 8 hours for their iPhone to update, and then they're talking about horrific battery life, and I've had none of that. Absolutely none. It's been perfect.
I mean, the battery life, there's usually a very simple explanation. Every time you update your device, at least till finally, didn't they? I'm not sure. The syncing of faces and all of that, basically all the image processing is done again when you update to a new version of iOS, as far as I know. I think Apple changed that now, so it doesn't have to be done on every device now.
So I've got lots of pictures of the family and stuff, but I've never set it up with names or anything like that. Will it still do the image processing?
Because it still does it because search for, I don't know, cats or kitchens or whatever, and it will find it. So it has to do some processing, and I think that still does it every time or updates it or something.
Mine obviously just managed to put everything in the shit category too quickly. Have you boys had swift updates and painless updates?
I was even surprised when you said your iOS update took 40 minutes. Mine was much quicker than that, from what I remember.
Yeah, by the time it had downloaded and installed, it was probably about 40 minutes gone by.
I would guess mine was done in 20 minutes, maybe.
Yeah.
Like half that time. But the watch did take a really long time. But I would say, but when I'm saying really long time, I would say I'd have had a similar experience to you, Ewan, maybe like 40 minutes, 30, 40 minutes for the watch update.
I think that seems to be the standard for the Apple Watch, for 30, 40 minutes, something like that.
I mean, we download speed. I did it at home, and we download speed to 200 at home. But, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't in the first hour, definitely. It had been up for a few hours before I bothered to do it. But, I mean, Magic Man's saying in the chat room, similar times for me, 40 minutes all round.
Yeah, it's not the download because the update is, I don't know, usually under 100 megs or something, if I remember it correctly. So it's not the download. It's really putting it on the
device. Download was 2 point something gig, I thought.
Really?
2.1 gig.
Yeah, but over a good connection, the download shouldn't take very long. I'm kind of with Patrice. It's usually the install process that's slow. Yeah. And I don't know if that's because they're doing, especially like with the watch, I think they're doing a whole backup to the phone first. That's probably really slow over the Bluetooth connection, and then
I think that the upload of the image to the watch takes really a long time. I mean, if you've ever, I don't know, if you've tried, for example, the Overcast one, I mean, until Marco dropped the feature, but I mean, Overcast had this podcast feature that you could upload podcast episodes to your watch. And that took forever because it was, I mean, the connection is so slow that, I mean, even for a 30 meg podcast or something, that took, I don't know, half an hour or so.
Yeah, I can imagine. I should have asked people in my audience, because I mean, my audio file tends to be around 50 to 70 megabytes. I think. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine transferring that over Bluetooth to the watch. Take forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Muller says his watch took over 2 hours to download and then transfer it to the watch and reboot. Yeah, no, I didn't find that. I mean, have you had battery life since as a problem? Because I've had nothing as an issue. I mean, yesterday worked 50% by about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is standard.
I thought I did at one point, but what had really happened was I was traveling to a client stuck in famous Los Angeles, Orange County traffic for it took 3 hours to go what normally would take 15 minutes. And I was using navigation the whole time. So when I got where I was going, my phone was at 25%. I'm like, what is going on? I'd forgot to plug it in the car.
Oh, right. So,
And I was using navigation heavily for 4 hours. So I think that's pretty normal.
So Hobbs in the chat room is saying with the new phone, they're changing the image from JPEG to the new standard. So if you've loads of pictures, that would take time. But I
doubt they're going back through and converting all your old images to the new HEIC. I think it's just new stuff, right? I could be wrong. I didn't look into it, but why would they go back through your entire library and convert all your JPEGs?
Well, storage. It takes less
maybe
space.
Maybe the thumbnails? But yeah, so maybe they're converting all the thumbnails.
Yeah.
I can't imagine they'd go back and convert the originals. I mean, maybe for storage reasons. I don't know.
Yeah, as I said, I mean, it's more efficient storage-wise, so they might actually do it.
I can believe they probably would do it, but Deepan says battery life for him has been bad, but figured it might be re-indexing everything after the update, but
yeah,
I've got loads of crap on mine.
Yeah, and Hobbs is right. I mean, if they're doing extra image processing, so it may just be the first, the first week people get kind of weird battery life issues as, background processes are running, and it'll kind of settle itself out.
Yeah, we hear this every year, basically. People complain about it, and then within a week or two, everything is fine. So
Hobbs is suggesting in the chat room that he's got 30% of his storage back. That's a lot. Right. That's an awful lot.
Yeah.
So maybe they are converting all the photos. I just haven't looked into that yet. I mean, I use iCloud photo library, so most of the images that I have aren't even stored locally. They're all cloud, and I just have thumbnails. So
CRS is saying he could literally watch the battery percentage reducing in front of his eyes, but it seems to be stabilizing now.
I had that during the betas. I mean, at some point it was literally doing that. The phone didn't even last a full day, but I mean, that's the beta. So
you could suggest if you were going from the betas to the full version that you wouldn't maybe get the indexing process again. Yeah. That wouldn't be a problem. But I've not done any of the betas, and I haven't got that issue, so I don't know.
Here's Here's my thing with battery is a long time ago, I used to watch that stuff like crazy. And then a long time ago, I realized all that really matters is the phone lasting all day? And am I having to do weird, you know, like weird outside my normal sort of routine kinds of charging things? And So if that's not going on, I really don't watch it anymore. I even turned off the percentage, and I used to, you know, have the percentage indicator on there all the time. And I even flipped that off because I just went, you know what, I'm just going to use it. And if the battery lasts all day, I'm happy. I'm not going to like obsess over that.
Yeah, no. But I mean, the percentage indicator is good in, as in, I've got to go and find somewhere quickly to get some power.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, again, I just use it as I use it and don't generally worry about it. And then if I do have a situation where it's like, wow, the phone only lasted, you know, half a day, or it was, you know, low half a day, then I'll turn it back on and sort of monitor it just to see if there's something going on. But the point is since the update came out, I haven't had to do that. Like, it's just, I've been using it as I normally use it, and I've had no battery issues.
Yeah, and then, I mean, you also usually have nowadays access to, I mean, chargers and whatever USB ports, basically everywhere. I mean, I have, basically, whenever I leave the house, I have a lightning cable with me. And if there was an issue somewhere, if I just notice, hey, I don't know, I didn't charge it last night or whatever, yeah, there's it's usually very easy to charge it somewhere. So it's not even a big hassle anymore.
I've got better at that of late, but it doesn't apply always now.
I basically been going since yesterday without plugging it in. And I just plugged it in this morning, and it was at 32% when I woke up, but I hadn't plugged it in since yesterday morning. So
that's good.
Two full days. Yeah.
Good.
With normal usage.
Whole 24 hours. Windrider in the chat room says he went from 90% battery to 47% battery in 40 minutes, but then he realized he left it in his coat pocket with a light on.
Okay.
Spot on, mate. Spot on.
You wouldn't think the flash would use that much energy, though.
I mean, yeah.
Well, that's kind of surprising. 40 minutes. 40% in 40 minutes. Percent a minute for the light. That's about right. That'll do. The iTunes, the 4K iTunes content coming for the Apple TV. Apple has said that its iTunes Store devices will not be downloading 4K TV content to people's machines. They will only be able to stream it live, and that seems like a bag of shit.
Yeah, again, I don't think this is Apple, though.
Yeah. I think that's one part. I also think it might simply be a storage issue. I mean, just imagine
you've got 64 gig. You know, one 4K movie is going to be 8 gig at most.
Right, yeah. especially if you want to store it on your Mac or whatever and have a backup. I don't buy that. I think this is purely Apple trying to get the deal done with the studios to not have the pricing and also to allow people to stream to get 4K for their existing stuff without having to pay more. And I think it was a concession saying, look, okay, we'll only let them stream it and not download it. Because again, the movie industry is still freaking crazy about, you know, piracy. They think people are going to rip that off.
But it seems, I can understand it with the TV, fair enough, because it might be a storage-based issue. But traditionally, you've been able to download stuff to your Mac, haven't you? But even that's gone.
Yeah.
Well, you can still get the HD.
HD, yeah.
Your Mac, but yeah.
See, now the other problem is as well, I'm sitting thinking, if I want to buy content, can I buy the 4K version now on my Mac, and then I'm 4K ready, if you like, in the future, rather than buying the just standard HD version?
Well, that's the point, right? Apple's going to, it's 4K at the HD price, so you get all versions as long as the studio gives Apple a 4K
all of them, yeah.
version of it, they're going to make that available to you. The problem is not allowing you to download it. I think it's an issue because the biggest issue there is a lot of people have data caps on their plans, and people don't know that, and they're going to start hitting that when you're streaming and restreaming the same 4K movie. And plus, you have to have really good bandwidth. You're not going to be able to stream 4K unless you have at least 25 megabits per second down, Apple says. So
yeah,
a lot of people that won't even be able to get content.
I think that's really the bigger problem. I mean, the data cap It might for some people make a difference, but I think overall it's not that big of a deal. But the, I mean, yeah, the bandwidth is a big issue. If you only have, I don't know, five megabit downstream, you could still download the 4K or the HD version. It simply takes longer, and then you watch it when it's there. But you can't do that anymore.
Patrice, it may not be a big deal in Europe, but in the United States, it's a big deal because all the carriers have data caps that people, once they start streaming 4K, I guarantee you there's going to be a lot of people hitting that cap.
I mean, we have data caps here as well. The point was more, I mean, how likely is it that you restream the same movie in the same month over and over? It's basically the same data. So I don't think that's the big difference.
You don't have kids, right?
True.
Oh my!
Okay, yeah, that's good point. Good point.
1,000 times in a month.
I've got I've had Ellis down here for the last couple of days. He wasn't very well on Tuesday and Wednesday, so I brought him down to work with me, and he set his Xbox up, but his PS4 here, and he was like, "Dad, can I get online?" Nope. I've only got 500 gig for the whole month for everything I need to do here. There is no way you're having access to it because you'll get an update for 25 gig or something stupid like that. Not happening. And him trying to exist without Wi-Fi for 2 days, I'd rather have just given it to him, I think, and just go, forget it, have it, just have it, okay? Because it was it was an absolute nightmare. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Just he was pulling his hair out, mate. So if you've got 500 gig like I have down here as a limit, he's going to burn through that pretty quickly.
So here's the thing with the download thing. I think, again, this is a concession that Apple made to get the pricing and the deal they wanted with the studios. And I think Apple knows fully well this story is going to come out and everybody's going to realize really quickly that this is a studio restriction and the public is going to put a lot of pressure on the studios. And I think eventually, 6 months from now, a year from now, this policy will change. I think they're going to allow downloads at some point because the studios are going to just look like a bunch of jerks.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what is nice is that you can also watch it on your, what was it, iPad Pro and I think even some Macs, right?
In 4K.
Yeah, in 4K. That's what Apple is saying.
Yeah, you should be able to. I mean, you've got a 5K iMac for a start, so there's one computer for definite, and I'm pretty sure my Retina MacBook will have it, but
yes.
But there's a certain point where, and I need to have a look at this and just to see for myself, but I'm already quite stunned by the quality of HD on here. And yes, I know it's going to be bigger, but it's only, there's an advert out here at the moment with Sky TV going, this is in Ultra HD, which is 4 times better than HD. And I'm like, no, it's not.
Not quite.
And actually, your Ultra HD is not Ultra. It's not the full 4K, mate. It's Ultra HD at 2160. So it's not even close to 4 times. It's not even twice. It's not even 3/4 more.
To that end, I think I also read that for older devices, even in the HD formats, you'll be able to get the, not that this matters too much, but I think they're going to be pushing out HDR stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Oh dear.
HD. It just means they've oversaturated it and stuff. But.
Can you imagine Blade Runner in HDR? And it'd be just like, it's daylight, isn't it? Whole thing's in daylight. None of it's in dark. It'd just be shit. Where's the mystery? Watchmen in HDR. Apple 4K TV reviews. Expensive, but with cheaper 4K movies, some of the limitations like the 1080p YouTube are in there as well. So you can't get 4K YouTube on it, which does seem a little bit silly. You'd have thought they'd have done that deal.
Silly.
You'd have thought that we would have done
codec.
That.
It's the codec. Google uses that V9 or what's it called?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever Google's codec is, and Apple doesn't support it, and Apple and Google fight over the, Apple wants to use H.265, so that's a format war thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, I think Apple needs to give in because YouTube's just got too much content that people are going to want in 4K.
You would have thought they'd have supported that. That seems really short-sighted not to have picked up on that very early on.
Well, you can also argue the other way around. I mean, Google is basically creating their own kind of their own format for it.
Right.
And you could also argue that Google should give in because H.264 was basically the winner and H.265 is the successor of it for 4K. So
okay,
you can argue both sides, I think.
Can I just throw in, though, that Google are the content controller and therefore they have to deal with other issues like piracy and people trying to rip off YouTube videos and get them down with Clip Converter and stuff like that. So they've got to have a handle on that element of control associated with it. Plus also they might be getting file saving because don't forget they're hosting all of these files and it's still 2 billion films a day, isn't it? Or something stupid.
Yeah, something stupid. Yeah.
I can't get my head around that. Even now, 5 years later, I can't get my head around 2 billion uploads a day.
I mean, ultimately Apple's going to have to give in on that one, I think. I mean, they're going to lose that battle. But for now, I think that's what's holding it up is they only offer the 4K content in the DP9. And thanks, Mr. Jose F. Joseph F.? I don't know.
Joseph K.
Yeah. Hobbs is saying that the Sky stuff, I reckon, is compressed as hell, is what he's saying. And Magic Man says, I wish Ewan wouldn't beat about the bushes over his HDR opinions. Yeah, fair pay. All right, mate. You got me. Fair comment.
Oh, the one other thing that came out in the reviews with the Apple TV on the price and what it was supporting. I don't know much about this, but I guess the Atmos audio from Dolby, mm-hmm. Dolby Atmos, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Is not supported currently on the Apple TV.
But they're Apple saying that's coming, aren't they?
Huh?
They are saying that's coming.
They're saying it is coming, and the theory is the reason is, this is an odd one, but it would make sense for Apple that it's getting the Siri voice to work properly over the app. I guess how Atmos divides up the audio, Apple needs to figure out how to support that with the Siri control on Apple TV. So it doesn't come out weird, or it doesn't work at all. And some people are arguing, well, just give me the option to not have Siri, voice responses on the Apple TV, but have the audio support for my video. Because again, Apple has come out and said Apple TV is a video first device. So I get the point, but it's coming. Who knows when, but.
Fair enough. Have we all had a play with ARKit?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Favorite app?
Carrot Weather.
Really? I haven't got that yet. I've got the Carrot Weather app.
You can put Carrot now in your real environment, and she is basically, she told me that she knows 8,400 or 747 ways to kill me.
Yeah, she's not polite, is she?
And now she's in my room, so I believe she could do it.
We did have a little play earlier on, and we found some really cool stuff. Here you go. Let's have a go with 3-in-1 ruler. This was kind of cool. So you want to measure your MacBook? Here we go. We're going to go all the way across here. Wobbly old man hand.
Drawing a ruler across the surface of his.
Yeah, if you're on the audio podcast here and you've not listened to the video one, then more fool you. This was fun. So we've drawn the width of it, and there we go. Look at that. You see, now we measured that. Here's one we measured earlier.
And 14.1 inches is almost exactly correct. It's like 14.14 or something like
that. Yeah, that's pretty impressive, isn't it? And we did the keyboard here earlier as well, and that was another one that was kind of good.
I got it within 0.02 inches. Pretty amazing. Now, I was saying earlier, I have heard on the measuring things, like if you're trying to measure an entire room or something like that, it can do it, but depending upon angles and tilt of phone and stuff like that, it's not going to be super accurate. So people need to know you're getting an estimate, not a, don't measure your lumber for your remodel project using your iPhone.
Yeah, so here we go.
Use a proper tape measure.
If I'm perpendicular to something, it does a better job.
Right.
Than if I'm, it doesn't want to catch that because it's black. There we go.
So the verdict is, it's not, I mean, it's not going to be perfect. It's not a replacement for proper measuring tools, but it's pretty darn good.
I was impressed, I have to say. I was impressed. The other one is Dinosaur Monster Park.
Monster Park.
There we go. So there we go. I've got a dinosaur. And you can punch the dinosaur, piss it off. Which has got to be good. Yeah, go on, Sunshine.
What off is the most amazing thing to me so far about Apple's AR kit, sometimes it has some trouble finding surfaces, especially. I'm amazed at how well it's doing in your office. I've noticed some of the apps, and I don't know why it's different. If there's a cluttered space or if it can't kind of find edges of things, it, you know, because there's stuff in the way, it can sometimes have a hard time detecting the surface. But the most amazing thing to me is once you've placed an object in the environment, the ability to walk around it and walk away from it or point the phone away from it, and it maintains the AR and the positioning and stuff like that, that's the really cool part. Like Parrot will do the same thing. She'll even detect when you've looked away and start screaming, you know, like yelling at you and insulting you that you've, you know, turned away from her. And you can come back and it'll be in the same position and you can walk around it. And other, you know, prior to this, other AR systems, you know, you go out of frame or something like that and the whole experience breaks down.
It disappears, yeah.
Which, it really ruins it.
The dinosaurs are pretty realistic, aren't they, look?
Yeah, I'm the lighting, and I don't know if this is just implementation and how developers have implemented it. I've noticed the lighting still seems to not 100% represent the room environment, and maybe you need the newer phones for that. I don't know if that's a technical limitation of the sensors that are actually on your device.
Yeah, see, there's a pole look, and its tail is in front of the pole when it's clearly on the floor, and it does a really good job of the perspective on the floor, but it hasn't worked out that pole's closer for some reason.
Right. So. And you got the shadows there and stuff like that, but I meant more like the lighting on the object is supposed to, it's, you know, part of it is it's going to measure the room environment and then supposedly apply the right levels of lighting, and it does okay, but it's not super great, but I mean, still incredibly impressive.
See, look, it hasn't worked but out, I mean, that the bench
lighting,
is closer.
Lighting is an incredibly hard thing to do. I mean,
oh, absolutely. I'm not faulting it. I'm just saying, you know, their demo, it looked more impressive than it does in application. And again, I don't know if that's how, you know, developers' choices in implementing that feature or not implementing that feature. I've noticed some apps kind of seem to do it better than others. But like, for example, I was playing with something earlier today, and I was in a very dark room and the object was very bright. So I have a feeling that app, because it really didn't need it, wasn't applying probably some of the lighting stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So
it's pretty good.
Experience varies by app. And I've noticed, again, some apps seem to be better at the detection than others. A fun one, if people haven't caught it, that they might not realize they have it, is a PCALC has an AR mode in the help screen.
Probably the best about screen that you can ever, that was ever built. It's basically a game in an about screen.
And we've got Night Sky here, which was another one that I've got down, which is, I got to say, has blown my mind a little bit. It's really, really cool. It's lovely. It does go very, very well. I mean, it looks quite jerky on the video here, but the picture of the night sky, and as Adam correctly pointed out beforehand, you can switch off the visual so that you've got your actual night sky on as well with the graphics, but the problem is mine's an office, so it doesn't really work.
Yeah. Not really designed for indoor indoor experience.
So there you go. Sun's nearly
set. I guess so you can look out the window right now and I guess see that star that's out the window. So maybe
except it's daylight, mate. Still on British summertime. It's only 5 o'clock.
Again, if it was night, you were indoors, you could figure out, you know, as you were walking out the door what's in front of me.
Deep Pan says, that's no moon. Very good, mate. Very good. I like the AR stuff. I need to have it's got a category of its own. It does say AR apps, and you can click on the button. It says see all. But then you only get like 10, 12 applications. So you've then got to start hunting around. Unless you know the name, it's kind of difficult to find. What about 32 gig apps? Have you guys lost any? Because I lost International Snooker. which is going to lead on to my pick later on. But the international snooker was a numbing game for me, a leg-numbing game for the morning motion. And I enjoyed it. But it, what was really great was you could play a whole frame in one sitting, in inverted commas. That's gone really? For me now. I can't play it anymore. It's stuffed.
The only one that I lost, and I use it so infrequently, it didn't matter too much, but I still love the app, is Tipulator.
Mm.
This is a great tip calculation app, but Siri can do that. I mean, there's a million other ways to do that, so that's fine, but it was just a beautiful, fun app. And the one feature that it had that I haven't found in many other tip apps that I liked, because I'm a little bit of a math nerd, is you could have it adjust the tip to be a palindrome. So that was always fun.
Yeah, I haven't lost anything. Maybe it's due to the fact that I don't have too many apps, or maybe it's simply because the apps I use are updated. I haven't lost anything.
I don't get what you mean by a palindrome. Does that just mean that you tip too much? Because it's $1.09 and you give them $9 one.
Say the tip is supposed to be, you know, I don't know, $12.51, right? Yeah. So 1251, it would change it to $12.21.
Right.
Right. So it would calculate it and then figure out how to make it a palindrome, either going up or down. So you could go up or down pennies, but, you know, I always tip 25% to 30%. So they're still always getting more than the standard tip for most people from me.
So what's the favorite AR app so far then?
Favorite AR app. I mentioned, I think at this point, Carrot, but I haven't had a Carrot Weather, but I haven't had a time to try too many yet.
Just Carrot, right. There's if you go to Mac Rumors, there's a whole load of notable apps. Carrot Weather's on the also is on the honorable mentions, but not in one of the featured ones.
It's not super useful. I mean, I'm looking for the one. I want to find the ones that are actually, you know, something that's going to change how I use the app on a daily basis, right?
I'm looking forward to the IKEA one. That could be good. That's you know, that'd be interesting to see how that deals with dimensions and distance. It does seem to be that there's a real issue over skewing. It doesn't seem to have figured out skewing at all. Everything's got to be perpendicular for it to work. It can't do skewing particularly well.
I mean, phone tilt, how you're holding things. It, all this stuff is super hard, though.
Oh, yeah.
And so I want people to sort of step back too. Not that we're bashing on it. It's
no,
just
no.
We can see where it has areas to improve.
iOS 11 Siri. Now this is going two ways, chaps, because Paul Wheatley says that it used to be really useful to him, but now it's completely wank and he can't use it at all. And I have gone from it being completely shite to actually it's starting to recognize me an awful lot more now. I wouldn't say it's perfect, and I wouldn't say I'm going to start using it every day, but I've noticed a significant improvement in Siri in the 11.
Yeah.
Satan says thank you because he can enjoy iced drinks now.
Who says that?
Satan.
Satan, yeah.
No, it's definitely better. I also quite enjoy the new voices. I mean, I don't know how good the voices in the UK are, but I have the US version, and I mean, the voices are just crazy good.
Yeah, it's a little freakish how natural sounding.
The other week we did 4-minute timer, didn't we? Hey Siri, set a 4-minute timer.
Okay, 1 minute since counting.
There you go. That's impressive. Because it had a little of an um and an ah there. Because I didn't think I said it very well. And I love the little logo at the bottom. The little starry swishy thing at the bottom.
Yeah,
that's really kind of cool.
New animation is kind of nice.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, it's not going to sell Siri to me overall yet, and the performance isn't going to make it stellar, but I'm at least impressed a lot more.
And I haven't tested other things, but at least with, because again, right after the update, I kind of had a long drive where I needed some navigation, and the one area that I was really impressed with is the updates to the navigation stuff. There's a lot more audio information, and I don't know if this is related to do not disturb while driving, since they've added that feature. Siri now gives you local lane guidance when she's rerouting because there's a traffic accident. Or she's actually, rather than just saying, hey, alternate route available and showing something on the screen, she will tell you, you know, the exits, and the lanes that you need to be in to route around stuff, all with audio. So I was impressed by that, because that makes the experience much better. And I'm hoping that has spilled over into some other areas, but I haven't had a chance to test it yet.
Yeah, that has also been my experience. I mean, even if you're not clearly speaking, she can pick up what you're saying. So that's pretty good. And because you mentioned navigation, did you enable or use the what's the feature called? The basically the phone locks when you're driving.
Do not disturb while driving. Yeah, I enabled it right away, and I've been using it since day one, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, me too.
Because you don't get any calls.
I don't get any text. It turns off all your text notifications while you're driving, so your phone's not going off, and you're not sort of compelled to look down at the screen. And the whole screen goes completely black. And even when you're using Siri, which I use a lot in the car, you're not getting visual feedback anymore, which is a little weird at first. But once you get used to it, it's really nice, because you're not tempted to look at the phone screen for any reason. And I've been using it for playing back podcasts, skipping ahead in podcasts, jumping around, playing my music. I mean, I'm doing everything with voice, and it's working great. We're responding to, you know, you can still ask if you've had text messages come in, and she'll read them off to you if you want verbally, but you're just not getting anything on the screen. And for people who, just as a cool little tip, if you do have people, if you've enabled it and you have people that are in your VIP list, if they need to text you something, they'll get an initial response that says, hey, I'm driving. I'll respond when I get back, and you can customize that response. But if they then just text the word urgent, send that, then future texts will come through after that. So they can break. There's a breakthrough mode.
What about things like podcasts and stuff like that, if you've got it enabled? And the other thing is, as well, there's no permanently piss off button. Every time I, you know, no thanks, no thanks, no thanks.
Yeah. I've not had any trouble with podcasts, but I use Apple's podcast app, so I'm not using a third party.
Yeah, I do, but does it go blank with that as well, or can you still see that?
No, it's totally blank.
Yeah.
I'm using Castro, and it actually works pretty well.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it. Again, you don't have to enable it, so it's just an option. I'm enjoying it personally.
There's me timer. Really good. No, but as with Apple, with a lot of things, I can't find the permanent piss off button.
I don't. You're talking about when you say
no thanks,
try and unlock the screen, and you tell it, "Yeah, I'm not driving."
Yeah, you just say no thanks. Do you want to switch this on? No thanks. Still keeps coming back and asking me after every drive.
Hmm.
And the other one is what was I thinking about?
Wait,
brightness. Yes.
Wait. Hold on a second. So you're saying it keeps asking you if you want to enable it.
Yeah. And I keep saying,
and you don't want the feature turned on.
Go away. And it doesn't. It keeps coming back every time I drive.
It's in the do not disturb settings. You should be able to just toggle it off. And I would imagine it wouldn't.
Yeah, but I shouldn't have to get the legwork of going into another area of the phone to switch them off. If it gives me an option, I should be able to say no piss off permanently. And it doesn't. I shouldn't restart. I shouldn't have to go hunting.
Well, that's, it's because it's the wizard thing. It's a new feature, and it's trying to get you to enable it. I understand what you're
saying. But there has to be a permanent piss-off button on that solves it at the core level. It can't ask me to then go, okay, well, fine. Well, I'm going to annoy you until you find out and guess how to switch me off. Because there's a lot of users couldn't cope with that.
Or you switch it off.
No, but a lot of users couldn't cope with that. There's people talking about, oh, you know, my mum and dad, the phone with iOS 11, I'm going to update them because I want them to have the security. Mm. But if that came up on my mum's phone, it'd be like, oh, God, man. And then
I can totally get what you're saying. You should be able to say no thanks, and it's a one-time ask.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, it's how it should be.
And that's
then
right.
If you want to go enable it, then you hunt to go turn it back on.
Yeah. And brightness as well. Yeah. Brightness on the screen, I've noticed that I can, because I like the brightness full on. I don't like seeing it. I don't like it adjusting it itself. And I've put it full on, and then an hour later, it's starting to do the brightness adjust itself again. And then I go full on, and an hour later, it's back to doing the brightness adjust itself. There's no manual override on that that's obvious to me either. And that pisses me off a lot.
Settings.
Well,
there's a setting for it.
Yeah, but I went to settings and I turned brightness all the way up. Whereas before, when you did that, it stayed there.
You have to hit the toggle that says auto adjust brightness.
There wasn't one.
Toggle it off.
There wasn't one by the brightness slider, that's for sure. When I had a look, I'll have a look in a minute.
Definitely not by the brightness slider.
Not one by the brightness slider. That's not okay. Oh, that's shit ergonomics.
You might be right.
Thank you.
That used to be there.
No.
I think they've moved it to accessibility, a million other things.
They've hidden it.
They moved things around.
Wankers.
Yes, that's crap.
That's crap. But yeah, see? Point to you, Ewan.
I didn't realize they had moved that. That's just dumb.
Sounds like a health and safety compromise. No, it's not. If it keeps badgering me.
I can't even find the setting even in...
Thank you.
Even accessibility.
And you slide it up to massive, to full thing, and then an hour later it's doing back sliding by itself.
It's an accessibility vision. Display accommodations.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, there it is.
You shouldn't have to go hunting for this shit.
This is the problem I always had with Microsoft.
Yeah.
So Apple is doing what Microsoft did in the 90s, which is you bury every setting 27 levels deep. No one can ever find it.
I want credit for that on the next Maccast, mate. That's
absolutely.
That commentary's copyrighted.
I will bring that up because, people are going to want to look for that.
Bob Beach has put auto brightness has disappeared from settings. He's obviously on the Safari feed, not the Chrome feed. Craig Ferengi says 3D touch app switcher gesture will return in future iOS 11s, but it's gone for now. People going to miss that. No, you don't think so?
Oh, no, it's great for people who want it. I personally never used it. I always forgot about
either.
It.
Yeah,
it was never a thing
neither
for
did
me.
I.
I could never actually do it very well.
It simply was hard to discover it, and so you forgot about it.
If Doc was here, he'd be going, I use that all the time.
Probably.
A lot of people do and like it, so it's good that it's coming back. I wish he would have explained why it was removed.
And DXO Lab says the iPhone 8 Plus camera is the best they've ever, phone they've ever tested. 94 out of 100, as opposed to 92 out of 100.
They lost that title with the 7, so.
Yeah, iPhone 7's at 85. 7 Plus is at 88, HTC U11's at 90, Google Pixel's at 90, iPhone 8 at 92, and iPhone 8 Plus at 94.
Yeah, believe me, the Android crowd, when the Pixel won that title, they were all over that, so.
Sure.
And was it a good phone? Because I've never looked at it, so I have to say.
Pixel has one of the best cameras out there, or have been claiming that. I haven't.
Everyone's been raving about the Galaxy 8, but it's not on that list at all.
Yeah. It
depends how much you trust DxO as well.
Exactly. But they make their own little add-on, right, for smartphones that's supposed to be even better cameras. So I don't know why they would be touting the built-in cameras so highly if they have their own thing. So they must not be afraid of quality of those cameras.
Yeah, if you look at the images that there are on the story on MacRumors, the room shots are pretty good. They're not bad at all. The darkness shots with the illumination behind, they're actually quite good as well. Not bad at all. I'm surprised that the iPhone 7 Plus did as badly with that image, because mine actually shoots that kind of stuff fairly well. The one that bothers me is when you get further down here, you'll see there that there's two images of a girl leaning against... she's moved the angle of her head, which is going to give problems, but the Google Pixel's blown out her face quite badly. But the iPhone 8, and this is my big problem, is that has just shot an underexposed image. Mm-hmm. There are no whites in that shot. And fair enough, you can fix in post, but, there's a tendency for cameras to want to just underexpose for safety.
Is it because it's picking the white point not from the main subject and maybe from the way in the background there? I don't know if that's for poop on that
I would have thought, I wouldn't have thought the evaluative metering is looking at all of that image, and it should be picking up the highlights on the stone on the left-hand side, and it should be picking up her blouse and the bottom set. I mean, if you look at the very bottom center of the right arm, you've got some close whites there, but they're not perfectly white.
No, I see what you're saying. So my question is, do you think it's picking up the white point from another spot, or is there just not any white point at all that it's picking up as a pure white?
It doesn't. I think it's deliberately undervaluing the whites. And I think it's doing it so that it doesn't blow it out, so it looks a better image to the layperson. But the average person isn't going to pick up that that's an underexposed image. So what we're doing is we're kind of encroaching on a world of underexposedness. And I notice it myself in my FS5 tends to underexpose. And I'm okay with that because I can always bring the exposure back in post. But it's got a tendency to want to have that soft look, and it's a bit of a now look at the moment is to be slightly underexposed.
Well, here's the thing is, I think Apple's goal with the images is to, as best as possible for lay people, give a I don't think they're going for photographer level. I think they're going for what people like to see, so I think you've hit the nail on the head, right? Is they're adjusting it so that they don't have blown out faces and stuff like that. So really the goal is not, will this pass the photographer test? This is, will this pass a really good balanced image? And we know that we've tweaked things in a way where it's not perfect from the photographer's eye, but for most people, they're going to really like this. And I bring this up because both the new portrait modes, the fake bokeh thing and stuff like that. Again, photographers are highly critical that that's not, and I agree that it's not that way, but the ultimate deal is like anybody using those features, any layperson using those features, suddenly their photos are way better than what they would do on their own, right?
I mean, if you're talking about the fact that people would point into the sun and fail to think about compensation of that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Would shoot in a particularly poor environment, so then they're given some HDR kind of boost off the camera. I'm okay with that, and I do use the HDR mode on the iPhone 7 Plus I've got. And the reason I use it is because it does a good job of correcting the image without making it look too HDR-ish. I've not got anything out of the phone that I'm really bothered about. It's a positive HDR use. I just think you've got to be careful that, and that's one of the things that I like doing with the PFL, the Fancy Photo League in BTN, is the fact that people are coming in and showing images and, okay, well, that's marginally overexposed, that's marginally underexposed, and people are learning from that. And the amount of overexposed and underexposed images that are coming in now are one a month, pretty much. And if they are underexposed or overexposed, they're fractions. It's me going, well, yeah, okay, you're a fraction off here. But it really is, degrees of separation rather than, before they were coming in and it was like, holy crap, that's just gray because it's so badly underexposed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the point is if you go back to those two images you were showing earlier, from my point of view, if I'm just out and about quickly taking a snapshot with my iPhone, I would much rather have the one where the blouse is a little less white, but her, I can see all the parts of her face versus the Pixel one where, she looks like a white ghost.
But
she looks...
So here we go. Here's the difference, though. Look at those two images and look at the bush behind. See, that's the problem with underexposure. If you underexpose,
I get it.
Then you take away color, whereas
and
there's rich positive colors in that.
I would come back and adjust the iPhone one and adjust the white points, too, because I know that, right? But again, as a layperson who's just taken a snapshot, I think if you hold up those two pictures and ask somebody which one's more appealing, it's definitely the iPhone one.
I agree. I think that if it's let's say average person appeal, then the iPhone 8 picture is probably better because it just looks more natural, even if it really isn't.
Yeah. Moving on.
By the way, I like the comment from Windrider. He said it's because auto brightness has disappeared.
Hackers are using iCloud's Find My iPhone feature to remotely lock Macs and demand ransom payments. Over the last 2 days, several Mac users had been locked out of their machines after hackers signed into their iCloud accounts, initiated remote locking, and then demanding money by menaces. It works even with two-factor authentication switched on. That's a bit worrying.
Well, it's not surprising. I mean, this is a feature of Find My iPhone that you can lock Mac. So if someone gets access to your account, sure, they can do that. They could even do it with the iPhones.
Yeah, but how are they getting into my...
Yeah, well, I don't understand how they're getting past the two-factor authentication.
Exactly.
That is the question, right? I mean, is there a security issue on iCloud.com that we are not aware of?
There's some way to maybe change the... There's no way to change the email.
Right. Okay, so if you look at that page, you go to the two-factor authentication screen. You've got the correct password, and it says, right, okay, two-factor authentication will guide. But Find My iPhone appears at an option at the bottom, which you can then access without having to go through two-factor. It won't let you get into the iCloud account, but it'll let you get into Find My iPhone.
Okay, well, I mean, but that makes sense, because if you don't have access to any of your devices anymore, I mean, if you only have one iPhone, that wouldn't work.
Two-factor wouldn't work.
Or one Mac, in this case.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they do have... Pretty sure I'd have to go back and look, because it would be in 1Password. But doesn't two-factor with Apple give you the backup keys?
Hello.
Don't I have
a I think so. Yes, I remember setting them somewhere.
Right, the one that they say now write this down and put it in a safe place, because if you if you do lose your device, you can get in using this code. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the best way around that. I mean, the ultimate point there though is, you know, why are you still using a lame password on your iCloud account?
They might not be lame passwords, because I started getting I've had a few pieces of spam come through on my .mac address of late, and it was
but that's not someone accessing your these people have access to these
the one thing that I take value in is the fact that most people don't know my .mac address.
Right.
The people that you guys know it, because we text each other with it, but there's quite a few that don't. So the layperson listening to this show should find it fairly hard to find out what that is.
Okay.
But I've been getting spammed to that address, and the only people who've got that address, and I've never bought anything with anyone else on that address. I've never registered for anything on a website with that address. I've only ever registered for Netflix and for Apple, and that's it with that address. That is it.
Yeah,
and that bothers me that I'm getting spam on it. Yeah, but that means either Netflix and or Apple have spammed that one off.
Or someone simply guessed, because it is, I mean, I know that, and it's guessable, at least.
Yeah, Ewan, I mean, the way that works is the spamming software, they take at Mac, at iCloud, at Gmail, at whatever, and they do every permutation on the front of that with a random generator.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. Yeah, it probably took this long because they were trying to guess that, and eventually after, you know, 3 years, 5 years, they figured it out.
Yeah. True.
Computer program just got to that to your random front part.
Fair enough. I've got a random computer on my front parts.
Clients and stuff. They're like, why am I getting these? I've never used this email address anywhere publicly. And I'm like,
Apple allows random computers on my front parts. This podcast and others is brought to you by UK2. Thanks ever so much to them for their sponsorship. Please support them. If you want anything from them, go to britishsetnetwork.com/UK2 if you just want to sign into your account, and we get the kudos for it. Gazmo sent me a message the other day saying he's setting a whole load of stuff up with them, and he wanted to give me the kudos, so how could he go about doing it? But if you go to /sponsors on the British Tech Network page, then you will get all the offer codes, and you could actually, you know, do pretty well. 20% off domain names. I think on one of the services, the VPS or something like that, you get an entire month for free with it. So it's superb. Check them out and send them thanks. Twitter, just at UK2, say thanks for supporting at British Tech, because they do make a big difference to us. And I went to my fitting at Uniku. If you haven't seen it because you haven't been in the Slack room, then I spoke at the Hoya launch of Uniku last week, and there was two technically competent blokes on who went on before me and were dazzlingly good, both foreigners speaking great English. And I went on and mumbled my way through a bit about my grandmother and a few other things, and told them they were going to have a great time the following day. But to a person, They had an absolutely great time the following day. They all got their faces measured on it. And actually, there was an interesting bit because I was making the film for them. And last Friday, I put out all the video and everything, and I slowed it down to try and pick a clip out. And as I was scrolling through, one of the girls whose faces was being scanned, I looked at it, and there was a pattern of infrared dots went onto her face. And I'm pretty sure that that's the kind of technology that the new iPhone 10 is going to be using. Yes. And it was a pretty good random scatter pattern on a face, looking for the humps and hollows and depths of all that kind of stuff. So the technology that's gone into this thing really is cutting edge. Because don't forget, they were doing face scanning with this thing 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when there were an initial development with it. So, you know, it really is cutting edge stuff, definitely. If you get a chance, then go to the Hoya website, Hoya.co.uk, and have a look. And again, tweet it. Excuse me. Thank you for their support for British Tech as well, because we do value what they've done. And that image there, those are the glasses that I've gone for with my scan, but I've done them in black. So we'll wait and see. 3 to 4 weeks for delivery, they say. And actually, I saw some better footage than I had of how the thing's made. The cake that they make up can have 400 pairs of glasses in it. So they sit and scan it. You know, they blow dust on it, laser it, blow dust on it, laser it, blow dust on it, laser it, and they can do 400 sets in that. And when you emerge and pull them out, there's actually a tag already printed onto the frame so that the ID's on it as well. It's really cool stuff, really cool stuff. If you go to the Hoya website, you'll see a picture of the, you'll see the video that I made for them. And they were rather pleased with it, and I was quite proud of it, so.
Yeah. By the way, Apple has confirmed that this is the way it works.
It is an infrared scan, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll dig the picture out next week and show you the lady at Unique who had a face scan, because nice. It's a good image. The Spider 5 Express, we've got one that's gone out to Darren Henley. It should be winging its way to him any minute. And we've got one more to give away. This is the last chance. This month, this week and next week are the last two chances to get your entry in. If you'd like a Spider 5 Express, then please send me an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com telling me what the 4 primary print colours are. Simply put those down and you will win. Not just the initials, I need to know the colours, please. So send that in to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and you could win the second Spider 5 Express. And then next month, we've got the third one to give away, and that will be awesome. Absolutely awesome. It's well worth having. It's a good 80 quid's worth. Right, it's time for the cool things. Start us off, Adam.
Oh, okay. I am actually going to pick something that I believe I picked in the past. Do you wanna... But what?
Sorry, go ahead.
It's a game, but it has been updated with a new mode using ARKit. So since we were talking about ARKit earlier, it's kind of fun. It's a game called Splitter Critters. And the object of the game is you have these little critters in an environment, and you're trying to get them from one side of the screen to the other so that they can get to their spaceship. And what you have to do is basically with your finger slice the environment and then move the different sides. So you're playing with the perspective and stuff like that. And so now with the new ARKit mode, what you can do is you can scan your room and it will drop a cube that you play the game inside of. And what's really cool is you can actually move into that environment now, and you can kind of see the layers. So now it's not just two dimensions that you're dealing with when you're trying to solve the puzzles. You're actually having to go in three dimensions, and there's layers of things behind. So everything's on kind of multiple planes. It's almost like, what's that effect they used for Star Wars? You know, the glass plane effect. Can't remember what it's called, but it's basically like that. You have all the different elements are in different planes. So you can play around with ARKit. And it's done really well because you can drop this thing on a table in your room and then really kind of move around it, move into and out of the environment, kind of see what's going on.
You recommended this before and I didn't buy it, and I should have done. And I'm glad I didn't buy it because now I'm going to buy it with AR.
Yeah. So they just added that in, and it's a whole separate set of levels and a different, I mean, it's the same game, but it's new levels that are in AR, and it's just really fun and interesting to play around with. Is it breakthrough? No, but it's fun, and it's in the existing game. And the game itself, if you have never played it, it's just a fun, you know, casual game that you can play. And there's a ton of levels in the base game. I haven't even gotten through all of them. So, and I can't remember the price. I want to say it was $4 or $5 or something.
£2.99, because I'm just about to drop that on it.
Yep.
Do you...
Splitter Critters.
With the games, do you get a notification if there's a... is there an AR version, non-AR version sometimes, or is it if there's an AR version, it's enabled in both? I know it's enabled in both here, but...
Right, I don't know. I think it's up to the developer, however they've decided to do it. Excuse me.
Yeah, this says AR mode enabled, so...
Yeah, it's a separate button. When you bring it up, and it literally goes to a second set of, like a whole new set of levels. So,
cool.
It's almost like a game within the game.
I have purchased that, and over the curry tonight, I will not be talking to Muller very much. As usual, he says.
No loss.
No loss. I just want to give a shout out to Will Green from British Mac as well. If you don't listen to his podcast, then you should. It's an idiosyncratic look at the world at Mac, most definitely. And he's a good guy. He's had a rough time of it the last year. He's had a right old time of it. So I'm encouraging you to go and have a listen to the next podcast, because he's got a bit of a special announcement he wants to make. So please go and have a listen to British Mac's next episode and take up the cause that he's going to offer to you, because he's a good chap and he deserves a break. So get well soon, Will. All right, mate. I'll say no more. Patrice, what have you got for us?
So mine is also a repick, also due to some really cool new features for iOS 11. It is Working Copy, which is actually a Git client for iOS. I use it on my iPad. And the cool new thing about it is that in iOS 11, it does two things. One, it enables in-app drag and drop, and even out-of-app drag and drop. So it can, for example, drag an entire folder to, notes, for example, or to your text editor or something like that, and editorial, for example, that's what I'm using it for. But it can also reorder things within the app with drag and drop. And the other cool thing is that it is providing a file provider in the new files app. So you can also get all your folders and all your files from Git repositories in the Files app, and can access it with any app that is Files enabled. So that is really useful for writing, for developers, anything like that. I know that, for example, MechStories, they talked about in one of their last Relay FM episodes, they talked about that MechStories is using Working Copy and Git for their writing, basically. So it's a really cool app, and it's easy, and I think it's not that expensive. I can't remember what it was, but
cool.
For what it does for a professional app, it's not that expensive.
Apple needs to... I lost 32 gig applications this time as well, and Apple needs to really have a rationalization of the App Store at the moment, because it is awful trying to find stuff sometimes. Really, is even if you know the name of it, it's a pain in the arse. So if you'd like that, then you know where it is. Well done. Thank you. Link in the chat room, Patrice, yeah?
I already did that.
Yeah. Same.
Oh, I forgot to do mine.
Good man. My cool thing is, now, as I said, I lost my morning motion snooker match, which was great, because you could sit there and in one motion, you could play one match, one frame. So it worked really, really well. And it was International Snooker 2012. And I've had a couple of other applications that I've had a go at with in-app purchases and that kind of stuff, and it's not as good. But I have found International Snooker 2017. Here we go. It's not perfect, but it's not bad at all. It takes a little bit longer to play a frame, but the controls are pretty intuitive. The lining up and that kind of stuff works really, really well. And you can just about get away with a frame in a motion, otherwise, but your legs are starting to get a bit numb towards the end, I have to say. But it's not bad. The physics are as good, and the gameplay is not too bad. And you can set up however many frames you want to play against your opponent to look for the win. And unfortunately, the old one used to be one frame to advance to the next level. This one seems to be a little bit more. I forgot to do it, and I've got 5 frames to get through to the next level, so it takes me a week to get to the next level. honest. But there you go. International Snooker 2017. Well worth the money.
I know it's not snooker or snooker, but I know there's some AR kit, or I saw, I think, an AR kit version of pool. And
all
I
right.
think a snooker one would be awesome, too.
It would.
Someone should do that.
Yeah. Not bad.
I think you could actually throw it down on a table and be walking around the table.
The thing that's nice about this one is when you change the power and the settings, you can actually see a little bit more about where the ball goes, its path. Whereas the other one, it didn't. It just kind of left you to your own devices. But this one, definitely, it's better. Much better. But it's just slower. It takes longer to go from shot to shot. And also the old one, you could speed up the computer so it played double quick. And with this one, I haven't. If it does do it, I can't find out how to at the moment. But it works. There you go. It's good enough. Cool. It's a bit light this week. There's only three of us, so you've only got three choices to play with. An international snooker will keep you going first thing in the morning till you wipe anyway. Where can we get a hold of you, chaps? Adam?
You can find me, as always, at MacCast on iTunes, or MacCast.com, the website. And also, be sure to check out the iOS Show podcast at theiosshow.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Patrice, where are you?
As always, every week here on The Mac Show, and everything I do on thepatrice.com.
Excellent, mate. Thanks very much for coming along. I'm Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We're going away to try and wake Doc up and say, where the bloody hell were you? Adam's got an hour early. Doc's going to be an hour late.
And... I went back in the old time.
I wouldn't mind, but we've got another month to daylight saving, mate, so it's going to get horrific. We'll be back again next week on Friday, no question. I'll have had my flu jab because I'm an old man now, so I get a free flu jab. Sharon doesn't. And I'll be feeling sick and dodgy, no doubt, so I'll have to have beer and curry to settle my stomach. See you next week. Thanks for listening.